Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Wednesday, May 4th, 2016. It's just before 2:30 UTC as we're recording this. I'm Sam Minter and Yvonne Bo is here too. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, I'm here from beautiful Cleveland.
Anyway, I was telling Yvonne right before the show, like, I basically have done no prep today. Like, I know
you're busting my balls about that picture of the Pentagon. Okay, all right, and saying it's not Cleveland. Yes, I know the Pentagon is not in Cleveland. Okay, but what I took off, I actually had to take a connection. And
we all knew that, Yvonne.
Well, but I had never gotten such a clear shot of the Pentagon from the air.
You're saying something that nobody listening has any idea because they're not like following you on Facebook or anything.
No, they're not. I'll explain. So today, I'm Cleveland. And so today I went and I my flight today to come over here, I would have loved to get a nonstop, but there's no nonstops to almost anywhere in Ohio from Florida, apparently. Okay, at this time of the year. So I went and I took a connection in our nation's beautiful nation's capital. And so when I took the connecting flight, I actually wound up with a window seat, which I normally don't try to get. Okay, but it was fine because there was nobody beside me, so I had both seats to myself. So when we took off, I had told Sam, hey, Sam, we need to do this show on Tuesday because I'm going to be in Cleveland. Okay, I'm going to be traveling. So the usual time we're going to be doing it, I'm going to be on a plane. Okay, returning home. So it won't work. Okay, So, okay, no problem. So Sam says, okay, no problem. Tuesday, you know, we'll figure it out. So I go and I said to put a picture on Instagram. It was actually originally copied on Facebook when we took off from D.C. because I got this perfect, gorgeous view of the Pentagon from the air. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember ever seeing that before, like myself, not from other picture, but myself, like taking a picture of it. And so I was like, well, look at this. I never got this view before. And Sam goes and replies, that's not Cleveland. And I'm like, the Pentagon is not in Cleveland, Sam. Yes, I am well aware of the fact that the Pentagon not being in Cleveland. Yes. Okay. All right. But I did not even spend an hour at National Airport today. So yes. But good look at the Pentagon.
There you go. There you go.
And I got to look at the Washington Monument too. It's always good. I always like, I like the Washington Monument. It's a nice monument.
Yeah, it's really nice when you do get, like, if you fly into National and you get the right approach, you get this beautiful view of downtown D.C. And it's really cool.
It is very cool, and it never gets old.
Yeah, every time I do that, in the wake of, events of, more than a decade and about a decade and a half ago.
Yeah.
It's still really surprising to me that National Airport is still open, given that approach.
I know, because that's what I was thinking too. When we were taking off, I was thinking about that. But yeah, but still there. So, so I did that. The other thing, well, we've got topics. I do have some topics.
So I was telling you.
Okay.
You said you took no topics. Yeah, basically.
But let me see one thing. Let me establish a couple of topics here for discussion.
Ahead.
Number one, I believe you guys went to the local conventions to go up to get to select the delegates
We went to the county convention this weekend.
Correct.
And yes, that's a good thing to talk about. There are no delegates selected at the county convention. It's about like the platform and stuff.
Okay, so you guys went to the county convention, and there were some interesting shenanigans happening over there, which I think we'll talk about that.
And of course, we've got Indiana happened, and Alex,
and we have a dog who's not a dog.
Say something real fast.
How many Alexes? How many dads? How many mommies? How many sisters? How many microphones? How many podcasts? Are there and beeps in the world? If you have a guess, tell us.
I have no idea.
You probably need
to 1 billion trillion.
Channel, right? Or Dad's YouTube channel.
Or Dad's podcast Facebook page. You can add comments there.
Yeah.
Okay.
All three of those you can do that question. But...
Okay. Let us talk. We're...
How many people have... how many people have eye patches like a pirate and they're not actually a pirate? Those are all the guesses you have to do. Either on my YouTube channel, Dad's YouTube channel, or the podcast website.
Okay. Good job. Okay. Let me continue with Yvonne now.
Okay. I got to admit, I don't have a good answer to his question. Very valid question.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know how many people actually wear eye patches.
Stop.
That are not pirates. Okay. I don't know.
I want to listen some.
Okay.
To...
You want to be able to hear Yvonne. Okay. He can hear you now.
Okay. I was saying is that I don't have a very good answer to your question about how many people have eye patches that are not pirates. But I would like a good answer, but I just don't have one.
Okay.
Probably not very many.
Okay, we're going to take, not a break, but just hold on.
Yes.
Alex.
Okay.
Bye. Close the door, please.
Okay. All right. So anyway,
what I was saying is, obviously we're going to talk about Indiana. I will talk about that convention stuff. That sounds great. Got any other topics?
Because White House Correspondents Dinner happened.
White House Correspondents Dinner. Okay.
And Obama was actually quite funny. Okay. All right. So,
because all of this is because I. Normally I'm all prepared. I have a list. I have all kinds of stuff I want to talk about. I've got it written down. I was, Alex has been sort of kind of not quite sick again. And, and we went to the doctor and we did the thing and blah, blah, blah. And he's a little congested, but anyway, I've been updating my delegate stuff.
Yes.
And, and we'll talk about the Indiana results in just a minute.
Yes.
But the one thing is, I was doing mobile phone updates of my website via my iPhone while I was at the doctor's office with Alex. And so I had updated the Democratic results a couple times, once an hour, as I do on election nights. And... then I got home and was doing the update for the next hour, and the lead had flipped on the Democratic side between those 2 hours. And so I started wondering, because all I did was I refreshed the page that I get my delegate data source from the Green Papers on my iPhone, and the numbers switched, and then I was like, oh crap. Had I, in the last couple of updates, gotten it backwards? And then so I spent the next half hour stressing about, like, I put in the correct numbers right away, but I spent the next half hour stressing about whether or not I'd gotten the previous two updates incorrect. And of course, there was no way for me to find out, because there was no way for me to refresh and find out what that webpage had said an hour ago to make sure I hadn't, like, mentally flipped them or something. But then I went back and looked through, like, all of the Twitter timelines for the last couple hours and figured out that, Clinton was in the lead at first, and then Sanders overtook her at some point. So it was. You want to talk again?
Okay. One of the people who has a patch like a pirate is Mommy.
Yes, because she hurt her eye earlier this week.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Not talking to the podcast viewers. See,
anyway, as it turns out, I think I probably had it right, but it really frustrated me because, like, I'm like, do I trust that I did it right the first time and I copied the numbers correctly, or was I just mentally assuming that Clinton would be ahead, so I put that in? And no, I think I actually got it right, and the estimates did flip after the first 2 hours. But I was stressing and going crazy, like, and not that it matters, like, because the, you know, in the end, I have the numbers right and everything, and it makes an infinitesimal difference on the graphs, you know, but anyway, I was just, I think I got it right from the beginning.
Well, anyway, it doesn't make that much of a difference in the delegates anyway.
No. And I'm not even talking about the delegate totals at the end of the day. I'm talking about what was the delegate estimate at the website, the Green Papers, at 023 UTC. Right. And at 2357 UTC, or whenever it was I took the samples. And like, you know, did I, at that hour, get it right, or did I screw it up? And I think I have determined, through forensic examination of other circumstantial evidence, that I probably did indeed do it right. But I've been, like, for the last hour, stressing out sort of existentially about, oh my God, did I mess it up? And being bothered by the fact that there was no definitive way to confirm, because I hadn't, like, taken a screenshot of it or anything to determine, you know, at the time. So I can't go back and say, yes, I got it right, or yes, no, I didn't, for sure. So the question is, do I trust myself? And I don't know. Anyway, I think I got it right.
Okay.
Circumstantial evidence. Anyway, so we'll do the election stuff.
Then yes, we have a lot of election stuff.
We'll do the election stuff. We'll do the convention stuff. And then, Alex.
When you need a bath, you didn't put in bubbles. You put in vinegar.
Yes, I know. Okay, bye. Okay, we'll do
the... And a White House Correspondents' Dinner.
We'll do the election stuff. We'll do the convention. We'll do the White House Correspondents' Dinner. You got anything else, or is that our agenda?
That's what I got.
Okay, so we will take a break, and then we will jump right in to what happened in Indiana and the aftermath thereof, which has, you know, even though we're doing this on Tuesday night, enough of it has played out, so we know what we have to talk about, basically, here. We will be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
And we are back.
All right. So.
So Indiana.
Indiana.
First Indiana.
I lived in Indiana.
Yeah, you did live in Indiana for a while.
So, in fact, Sam visited me in Indiana.
Yes. Well, I used to live in Indiana, too.
That's right. You did.
For part of sixth grade, I lived in Indianapolis.
Yeah. Yeah. Forgot about that.
So anyway, of course, you know, when I was in sixth grade, I wasn't, you know, following all this politics stuff in detail like we do today, but
I actually couldn't vote while I was living in Indiana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Indiana, look, the bottom line is, and we'll get into all the ramifications and details or blah, blah, blah. In terms of delegates, as of my last hourly update, which I did right before we started the show, on Clinton Sanders, I mentioned that Sanders was winning on delegates. The margin was 41 Sanders, 34 Clinton, with 8 delegates still outstanding. By the time you listen to this, this will have changed in detail, but the overall picture won't, which is Sanders won by a few delegates. And it makes no difference whatsoever to anything. Do. This is Sam from the future here. Of course, those remaining delegate totals did come in. The final in Indiana was Sanders 44, Clinton 39. And of course, it still didn't make a difference. At least those are the totals as of when I'm doing this. They sometimes jitter around a little bit, even weeks later. But anyway, Because it's not by anywhere near the margins he would need
in order to catch up.
Before we we'll get to the Republicans in just a second, but we mentioned last week that it looked like the Sanders folks were finally starting to admit that it's over.
But they backed off of that
just in the last 48 hours. They've been talking
and
again
they're
about
going to contest. We're going in for a fight and we're going to take this down and somehow.
And they're appealing to the superdelegates to change their mind. And by the way, it's no longer change your mind because like Sanders won your state or anything like that. If all of the superdelegates in states that Sanders won flipped to Sanders, it still wouldn't be enough.
Right.
No, it's now. No, you have to go for Sanders because he's better against Trump than Clinton is.
I'm really getting baffled by all this nonsense.
Well, and the bottom line is it's flipping around like any sort of notion that there was some sort of consistency here in terms of the Sanders folks' feelings about superdelegates. I mean, they've had every possible opinion about superdelegates over the course of this thing, whichever happens to be the one that best plays into their narrative at the moment.
You mentioned and we'll talk about that when you talk a little bit about how you were at the local convention. But that apparently they thought that the good strategy to change your mind was just to yell at him.
We'll talk about that in the next bit. But yeah, I mean, Sanders folks, so far, the attempts of Sanders folks to convince superdelegates to change their mind, from all reports, if anything, have made those Clinton superdelegates even more resistant to change because the Sanders folks have just been pissing them off.
Mm-hmm.
In one way or another, the Sanders folks have just been annoying them and basically doing exactly the opposite of what you would really want to do if you actually wanted to persuade someone to change their mind.
Yep.
But anyway, look, Clinton Sanders at this point, because superdelegates do exist, Clinton now only needs about 17%, a little less than 17% of the remaining delegates to clinch.
But let's get this clear. Okay. Yes. Hillary has a majority of the delegates, no matter which way you slice it.
Yes.
With superdelegates, with pledged delegates, whatever the fuck you want.
Also, if you threw that out the window and just said, let's look at popular vote, she's way ahead in that, too.
Exactly.
She's,
so I don't know. So this is why I am like, okay. I'm like, that's why this is driving me crazy. They keep flip-flopping all over the place as to how to convince it. And I'm like, I don't understand
By the way, I will also add that even the things about being better against Trump, by my estimates on electiongraphs.com right now with, all the state-level polls, Sanders versus Trump ends up a Sanders win by 80 electoral votes, which is awesome. But Clinton versus Trump ends up a Clinton win by 138 electoral votes. So she's winning by a bigger margin there, too.
And I like it.
Now, having said that, one of the interesting things on that you do see is that on some individual states, it is very true that Sanders has a bigger margin against Trump than Clinton has. But it's basically places where they both have a lead. He might have a bigger lead, but it doesn't matter because they're both ahead and they're going to win that state anyway.
Right. So it doesn't make a fucking difference.
Yeah. So anyway, there's some weird polling things so that, Sanders has been polled a lot less than Clinton. So you could make some arguments there. But the bottom line is it's over.
It's over.
Sanders has to admit it. Sanders, all he's doing from this point forward is
just pissing off a lot of people.
Is pissing off a lot of people, and also souring the pot of his supporters are already unhappy that he's lost, okay? But he can go in such a way that tries to spend the next couple of months mending the fences, or he can go in such a way that tries to burn the bridges. And
he seems to be on the flame on Costanza mode at this point. I mean, first he went and he sounded like he was like going to admit, and then he decided, flame on!
Yeah, I don't know. And so we'll see. Look, he can, his rationale at this point for calling it a contested convention is that it's very, very likely that Clinton's numbers of pledged delegates alone won't be over the 50% mark of the total delegates, which is a bit of an unfair way of looking at it.
That doesn't mean anything.
Right. Like, if you were going to look at that at all, you could say, will she have the majority of the pledged delegates? And she almost certainly will.
Exactly.
But if you construct a world where you're only counting the pledged delegates in the numerator of the fraction, but the denominator of the fraction includes the superdelegates anyway.
That doesn't make any sense.
Then yes, she and what that means is she may get to the convention in a position that in order to get a majority, so she needs saying that some she, in order of her, in,
so now the argument is that she needs a supermajority.
Well, no, the argument is that
no, because a supermajority of pledged delegates without superdelegates, because that's what analysis is.
Well, because he thinks the super should go the way of the pledged, but no, what he's trying to say at this point is there's no way that you're going to get to the convention with either one of the two candidates with a majority without some superdelegate votes. Therefore, it's legitimate to lobby the superdelegates up until the moment they vote, which, by the way, it is.
That's fine. That's fine, and that's true.
But they're not going to
And the whole thing, I'm just like, of talking that it's going to be contested, and that it's just a joke, and he knows it. And I'm like, I just find it really disingenuous that he keeps talking about this crap, you know, like this. When honestly, he knows he's just, you know, he doesn't have it. I just don't get the whole thing. But anyway, not that it really makes a difference. Okay, all right, more than an entertaining sideshow.
Yeah, I think that's what it is at this point. And he's going to continue to try to get, you know, his stuff in the platform, and he's going to try to make, you know, Clinton move a little further left, or maybe he's going to lobby a little bit on, you know, who he wants as a VP or something. But, you know, frankly, the longer he does these kind of antics, the greater the chance of Clinton saying, well, see, you know, fuck you. You know,
true.
You're being a dick here.
This is your moment to negotiate.
Yeah.
And what he's doing is not negotiating, which, by the way, goes with Bernie's track record, which is why a lot of people have said over his career, he hasn't gotten a lot of stuff done, because he's not exactly a good at this negotiating stuff like this. This is what he does. So, you know, I mean, I guess this is par for the course for Bernie.
Yeah. So, you know, if he's going to do this, we'll continue to let it play out. I mean, it looks like just in terms of pure delegates, you know, to we're still going to have to go to California before Hillary, you know,
clinches
this thing, even counting
superdelegates,
Superdelegates.
Right.
So we're going all the way to the end, no matter what, I guess, you know, but the outcome's known.
Yes.
You know, and as we have said repeatedly, the outcome's been known since the beginning of March at the latest.
March. I said it was known since January. I mean, I said it was known since December. Every time you wanted to talk about the Democrats, I kept saying we shouldn't talk about them.
Well, yeah, but look, you know, and I've said, you know, when we started out on February 1st, you know, the level of a lead Clinton already had through the superdelegates before Iowa even voted was almost enough right there that it was at the point where in the Clinton Obama race, I said, it's over.
It's over. Exactly. You know, right.
And so But at the very latest, if you're very generous and we're allowing the, you know, possibility of, a Sanders explosion, then
that would be,
well, not a literal explosion, but
not a literal explosion. Okay.
But then you took us through March, but once we got past Super Tuesday, it was clear that it wasn't happening. Again, as we always said, unless like Clinton shot herself in the foot again, not literally. But we've let it play out and that's fine, you know, and it's to some degree healthy, but at some point, you got to start sort of putting things back together, I guess. Of course, in just a minute, we're going to talk about the Republicans and their process. I guess you could make arguments there too, but anyway, look, it's over. It's over. It's over. It's over. It's over. How many times more do we have to say?
And
okay, Sanders won Indiana. Whoop whoop.
Woo! He got a whopping 6 more delegates than Hillary did. Woohoo! Yay! Yes,
it'll turn out something like that. As we said, as we're recording this, it's there's still some open.
A whopping 6 more delegates when he's got what's the deficit he's got right now? How many delegates?
It's actually 7 as of my latest update, but.
Okay, 7. Okay, great. 7.
Do. Sam from the future here again. And of course, with that final total of Sanders 44, Clinton 39, which it is as I'm assembling this, that difference is now 5 delegates, but the point's the same. Do.
But Albert, okay, but what's the deficit? He's behind by what, like 600-700 or something like that?
Yeah, hundreds.
Yeah, more than that, like whatever. I'm like, dude, give me a break.
And we've got 8 delegates still outstanding in Indiana. It could end up narrower than that 7 by the time we're done. It probably will be.
Right, but it doesn't make a dent at all in this thing.
No.
Not like one little itty bit. Not nothing.
Yeah, so on the Democrats, we've got Clinton. It's done. It's Clinton. Let's take a break, and we will talk about the Republicans, who are also done. We'll be back after this. Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now there are 4 ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, ABULSME, or Yvonne at IMBO, IMBOU. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's ABULSME. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you. Okay, we are back, and time to talk Republicans, and just as we did last hour, let me start with the delegate totals. As of my last check, which was right before we started the show, we had Trump getting 54 delegates out of Indiana with 3 more delegates to be determined. So who knows? Cruz might get those 3 delegates, but even if he does, 54-3 is a little bit of a shutout.
He got really crushed.
And it's actually very possible Trump will end up with all 57. Sam from the future here. Trump did indeed end up with all 57 delegates from Indiana. So Trump crushed in Indiana. We talked about
that Trump has done over the last week what he hadn't accomplished before, which was get over 50% of the vote in these last states. He has gotten like substantially over 50%. I mean,
well, and basically you see, you know, Kasich completely collapsed. Like his last hope was like he was supposed to be the one who would be good in the Northeast. Look how that worked out. You know,
oh my God, Pennsylvania, for example, that, and he got annihilated.
Yeah, I mean, the whole theory was Kasich would actually be competitive in Connecticut, Pennsylvania, New York, Delaware, Rhode Island, all those states.
Non-factor.
Non-factor. And then in Indiana, we were mentioning as recently as a couple weeks ago, there were no polls, and a lot of people thought that Indiana would be a good Cruz state. They were banking on Cruz winning Indiana. As soon as the polls started actually coming out in Indiana, they all showed Trump ahead by decent margins. When we talked last week, it was 6%, which, you know, okay, that's passable, but the polls can be wrong by 6%. Let's be clear, the polls had Hillary 6% ahead of Sanders, and Sanders won in Indiana. Even if Cruz had caught up here, it would be difficult. But I posted a number of links to like Sam Wang's analysis that showed even if Cruz won Indiana, there was still a 97% shot that Trump would wrap this up in the remaining states anyway. But without winning Indiana, it's 98%, whatever. But Trump annihilated him. Cruz collapsed here, and you know, we're looking at the overall vote total, 53% Trump, 36% Cruz, approximately, as of the count we have right now. And we're done here. And Cruz amazingly recognized that and dropped out this evening.
Unlike some other people.
You mean Kasich?
Well, like Sanders or Kasich.
Right.
I mean, Cruz saw it, and he's like,
Kasich is still in, right? I haven't missed an alert that he dropped out.
No, Kasich is not dropped out. I don't know what I guess maybe he doesn't have really much anything better to do, I guess.
Sam from the future here again. As all of you probably know, in the 24 hours or so between when we recorded the show and when I'm assembling it to put it out, Kasich did indeed also drop out, leaving Trump as the only one left in the race on the Republican side. Although other people are still in the ballot, probably in remaining states because it's too late to take them off. But everybody's dropped out. We're done. Well, here's the interesting thing about Cruz, and he must have been doing some calculation, some second ballot calculations too, because, you know, the one remaining hope, it's been clear for a while that Trump, well, for a while it's been clear that at the very least Trump would be close to the 50% mark. It's been clear for the last couple weeks that he would probably be over that 50% mark. The one remaining hope for the anti-Trump folks would be that they had enough people who were pledged to Trump but really liked somebody else that they could do something crazy like change the rules, unbind all the delegates, and vote their true consciences instead. And if Cruz thought he had 50% of the delegates in that category, then it seems like he would have fought on, because at the very least, because he could have brought this to the convention. The fact that he dropped out today tells me that his internal calculations showed that he did not have 50% for that either. So even if you unbound all the delegates, he still did not have enough.
No.
And so he knew it's over, basically. So he actually dropped out, which, you know, I was actually thinking Cruz would go to the bitter end, but no, he didn't.
I thought he would too. I really did. I was shocked when all of a sudden it just came out today that he was done. You know, I really was. So
yeah.
Oh well. But the thing is that, but come on. Okay, we're talking about that. Oh my God! All the rhetoric that came out this last 24, 48 hours between them.
Oh,
we don't get to use this stuff?
You mean the whole thing about Cruz's father helping to assassinate JFK?
Yes.
Is that not reasonable?
I guess, depending on the evidence.
Tabloid has a picture of his father with Lee Harvey Oswald.
And then the other thing is that even in his admission that this is over, it says here, and I'm reading from the front page of the Wall Street Journal Online, it says his chief rival Ted Cruz dropped out of the race after earlier calling the front runner a pathological liar.
Yes. Now, I will point out, just to be complete about it, because I mentioned, you know, Clinton only needs 17% of the remaining delegates to wrap this thing up. Sanders needs 84% or so. Trump needs about 36% of the remaining delegates, which, even if all the opponents in the world were in the race, he could get 36%.
Right.
Like, even if all of the people who've dropped out so far came back in and were going to contest all the rest of the races, he can still get 36%, no problem. But with Cruz out, you know, he's going to get close to 100%. It's not like Kasich is going to take it.
I mean, this is over. I mean, this whole thing is over. But I'm just like, the rhetoric still was just a little bit crazy.
Here we go. So we indeed have Trump as the Republican nominee.
Which,
you know, I did predict in our beginning of year show, our end of year show, I did predict
you absolutely did.
However, I will say a year ago,
No, but at the beginning of the year, you predicted that he was going to be it. I predicted somebody else. And
Rubio, I believe.
Yes, it was Rubio. And
he was going to dominate Super Tuesday, I believe.
I mean, yeah. It's Trump.
It is Trump. It is Trump. Trump.
I will say that I know, even though that asshole would not admit it, that even he's surprised that he's the nominee.
Yes. Yes. I think he is. I think, you know, I think there's ample evidence that he was doing this as a lark. He was doing this as a marketing thing for his own brand. He expected to do okay, but he did not expect to be the nominee, I don't think.
Nope.
But here he is. And I think, you know, all of the quote unquote establishment Republicans are upset about this, but they never, ever, ever did what they needed to do to actually stop him.
Let's be clear. They changed the rules to make something like this happen more easily from the last time, because Romney had a somewhat of a difficult time the last time to get the nomination, right? Because we had this whole, we had all these fucking people. We had Herman Cain and all these bozos and Gingrich and this whole thing, right? So they made the rules so it was easier for the front runner run away with it, right?
They did do that. Most of the rules changes were to try to avoid the kind of thing Ron Paul did with not winning the original caucus, but getting the delegates in the end once you go through the multi-stage caucus process. Of course, they didn't really fix the problem because, you know, they made the delegates pledged based on the first results, but they still allowed the actual delegates to support other people. So that is a problem. I think if you're really going to go in that direction, then you need to have something that allows the campaigns to pick the delegates rather than these multi-stage processes and blah, blah, blah. Like if Trump has won 15 delegates, then there should be a reasonable way to be assured that those 15 people really are Trump supporters, you know?
Right.
I don't know that
I'm like unhappy that Cruz is going by the wayside. I mean, it's like whatever. I mean, I don't know. This is like somebody. I mean, it's like picking between like rat poison and serpent venom. You know, between these two idiots. I mean, whatever. I mean, they're both equally
I just saw a tweet, Ivan, that you would like.
Yes.
I just retweeted it from Dick Pullman. Dick Pullman won. Now I get it. Cruz hired Fiorina to lay off his campaign staff.
Yes. There you go.
Anyway, going back, I just wanted to talk about the whole Stop Trump movement. And I think one of the things that's been consistent, and I saw someone tweet this or make this comment a few days ago, and I don't remember who, I apologize, basically said one of the consistent things we've seen all throughout this process is that the anti-Trump folks finally start taking a particular action about a month to a month and a half after the time it would have worked.
Right.
Like, they've just been slow on the uptake to get around to these things. I mean,
I just think for the most part, they couldn't believe that this asshole was going to win.
Yeah. I mean, they couldn't believe. I mean, if you remember back at the beginning, all of these guys were so busy fighting each other, no one let put a finger on Trump.
Right.
You know, it's like Rubio and Bush were going after each other. You know,
right.
Cruz was going after Carson or whatever. I don't know.
What's his name? Christie.
Oh, yeah.
After Rubio.
I completely forgot about
God.
Christie. Yeah.
Christie going after Rubio, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, he completely annihilated Rubio. But, you know,
so
he didn't do himself any favors.
They were all going after each other, first of all. Then they all like waited too late to drop out. Then, like, when you had this Rubio case, and not Rubio, this Cruz Kasich deal just in the last week that fell apart after like 5 minutes. But, like, if a deal like that had actually been made a month earlier, then, and people had actually stuck to it and meant it, where they came in knowing, you know, saying, we need a contested convention, here's the best strategy to get a contested convention, and they properly worked that and tried to, they might have had a shot, but no, that all fell apart. They all like, they could never, and it's like one of these things where the if your actual goal was stopping Trump, then you needed to act in such a way that was not necessarily in the direct interests of any individual candidate. And of course that wasn't going to happen because they were all in it for themselves. And
right.
Which you kind of expect in a presidential race, but, and then the quote unquote establishment, if they really didn't want Trump too, could have gotten off the damn sidelines at some point and actually pushed somebody. Like, there was this, I mean, you had a lot of money going into Bush, which of course was a complete waste of fucking money.
Oh my God.
But like, you know, we had fewer like senators and representatives and governors actually endorse anybody in the race than in any recent election in modern times, like, because so many of them just said, yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm staying out of this. Whereas so, if they'd all thrown their weight in, maybe they could have done something. But
well,
no, yeah, now
but,
they're
but
stuck.
Even like, but even when they supposedly were working together, I mean, it was a disaster. Look at the Cruz Kasich supposed alliance recently. How long did that last?
Yeah, less than a day. Less than a day. Yeah, I mean,
it was pathetic.
The other thing I've forgotten.
Oh, you've forgotten? Okay, all right.
My mind is a sieve. I know what I was going to say. Sorry. Even now, one of the things that we had talked about way back when was, okay, now that Trump is the nominee, are a whole bunch of Republicans, and I'm talking elected Republicans now, not like the Republicans at large, are a whole bunch of elected Republicans actually going to walk away from this and say, well, fuck it, I'm not even a Republican anymore, and start some sort of...
Well, I'll tell you what. Look, if they're like, and we could talk about what the one thing I want to talk about, which is the White House Correspondents' Dinner, but if I see John Bonner, Boehner,
so one of our listeners actually sent us the right pronunciation once.
Yes, he did, but I can't remember. But
it was
Jesus. I mean, they're like, they want to wash their hands of the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, but at the same time, you had Rince Priebus, another hard to pronounce her, whatever.
God, can't you guys get people that I can pronounce their names?
Anyway, he came out and said, Trump is now the presumptive nominee. We all have to come together.
Well, I get that, but of course, he's the leader of Republican Party. What the fuck else is he going to say?
Over the last couple weeks, there have been more and more Republican elected officials coming out and saying, okay, Trump. There are people who, up until, you know, a few weeks ago, we're like saying, you know, never Trump. We have to go for Cruz. We're going to support Cruz, whatever, saying, okay, maybe it's Trump. And
well, look, I do believe that obviously being now the fucking like Republican nominee that obviously a lot of people that before were not reluctant will do. But I also what I see is at the same time, a lot of people that just won't. I mean, I just see certain I don't see how everybody's just going to. Just, you know, like get all together, like in lockstep behind.
Yeah,
this
no,
asshole.
I mean, look, they're going to lose a lot of people in the general election, and I mean, I actually owe a post right now. Well, we'll talk about a general election in a second, but bottom line, Trump is looking like he is going to be annihilated. Now that may change. He moves into general election mode, but right now it looks like he's going to be annihilated. So obviously, a lot of people are going to flip Democrat over Trump in the general world. The question is, what do the party stalwarts do? Do the elected officials run away from him, or do they embrace him? And I think quite a few are going to run away from him. But I've said before, I think that in the end. I think part of my predictions at the beginning of the year was the party was going to fold. There's no appetite for an institutional resistance here. You're not going to have this is still my prediction today. Well, maybe it'll end up being false, but I don't think you're going to get like a whole bunch of senators saying, fuck this, I'm not Republican anymore. You know, they may walk away from Trump and say, I'm not going to campaign from Trump. I'm going to talk about my differences from Trump, but they're not going to say, yeah,
I'm not a Republican.
They're not going to say if Trump's a Republican, I'm not.
There could be some, but I don't think it's going to be a significant number.
Yeah, no, I agree. If there are, they're going to be a handful. I think for most, the attitude is going to be more like, okay, this happened. I'm still a Republican. I don't think Trump represents the best of the Republican Party. We're going to lose this year. I'm going to fight to keep my seat as a Republican, even if I don't like Trump. And then after Trump loses, maybe we can get it together in 2020.
Right.
You know,
maybe.
But I'm wondering just how much permanent damage is done by this.
Sometimes some of these nadirs are at a moment that really crystallizes them into making a permanent change into a different direction.
Yeah.
So this could be that moment. I mean, if that's what it comes down in terms of a significant defeat, I don't know. I mean, I think we look at the numbers and they point to a significant defeat. That's what they say now. If we compare it against historical norms of where candidates have been at this stage. And the gap that there is between the Democrat and the Republican frontrunner at this point. It's just bigger than it's, I think, one the data I was looking at, it's bigger than it's ever been. There hasn't been ever such a gap, which indicates that Trump will get annihilated. Now, obviously, I'm not saying that data can't change, but if I'm looking at those data points, that's what it points to right now.
So, and I will point to another. I've been a fan of Sam Wang. I've mentioned him before at Princeton Election Consortium. It's election.princeton.edu. His latest article on May 1st is actually looking at what head-to-head election polls right now tell us about November. And the bottom line is, we're now far enough along that they start to be predictive, and they've actually been predictive for a few months already, but it's at the point where it's fairly significant. It's not like crazy type, it's not like spot on yet. Like we need to get to after the conventions to be really close. However, looking at the variation polls have had between this time and the end of the election season, and how much variation there usually is, how much things usually move between May and November. Basically, given where things are now, the probability that Trump can catch up and win by November is about 9%. And the probability that Clinton will remain ahead of Trump is about 91%. Given historical variations in polls between May and November of election years.
Wait, state that number again. How would that number read again?
Given where polls are today and the historical amount polls have varied between May and November of election years, the probability of Trump catching up and winning before November is about 9%.
Nine. Okay, so that's what I understood.
And the probability that Clinton will remain ahead and win is about 91%.
That's a pretty strong number.
Yeah. Now, 9% is not nothing. It's possible. It's not 1%. It's not 0.1%. It's 9%. You know, one out of 10 times something will happen. And we've talked about
I gotta be honest. If you told me, Hey, Ivan, whatever the fuck you want to call me, look here, put $100,000. You got a 9 out of 10 chance of doubling your money.
Yes,
I would say that I'm taking out $100,000. 9 out of 10 chances, I'm fucking taking the money out right now. I'm fucking putting $100,000.
But flip it the other way. If there's a 10% chance the hurricane is going to hit your house, are you going to take precautions or are you going to say, "Ah, fuck it"?
Oh no! I'll buy insurance.
Right.
I'll buy insurance the other way as well. Yes. You're right. But if what you're telling me is, hey, I got 9 out of 10 chance. I'm money. I'm like, damn it, that money is coming out right now. I'm freaking. Where do I deposit? Where can I get paid?
Yeah, and we've talked before about the kinds of things that could lead to that 10%. Like, you know, obviously, if you just keep the status quo, we stay where we are. The kinds of things that could lead to that 9% are we go into a massive economic downturn.
Vince Foster, I think we were talking about.
We go into a
our involvement in Vince Foster's.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. Okay, look, because I'll make that my second point. After the economy going south, the second thing is Trump is really good at finding people's weak spots and exploiting them. And the truth is not an impediment to Trump. So, for instance, for those of you who don't remember, Vince Foster was a very good friend of Hillary Clinton's. There's some intimation they might have had an affair, but that's never been proven. A good friend of Vince of Hillary Clinton's that she'd worked with for years and years and years, that worked at the White House in the Clinton administration in some capacity, I forget what, he committed suicide during the Clinton administration. And ever since then, certain elements of the right have been pushing the conspiracy theory that actually Hillary Clinton had him killed. And it wasn't really a suicide.
Right.
And so this is the kind of thing that'll come out. And by the way,
the great thing is that between the two candidates, there's so much shit like that, that in the end, I think that that's going to be a wash.
Well, see,
I really do, because it's just unfortunate.
Okay, you're making a lot of noise. Stop messing around with whatever.
Actually, I'm trying to adjust my microphone because it fell. Okay. I'm sorry.
So,
I was saying is that there, between the two candidates, there is so much that like that, that I think at the end, it's a wash.
So here's why I think that potentially isn't a wash. Because why? Clinton, to some degree, is restrained by what's actually true. Trump goes on and tries to connect Cruz to the JFK assassination.
But what I'm saying is that there's so much real stuff.
The thing is, Trump can repeat this stuff over and over and over again, whether it's true or not, whether or not it's been debunked 1,000 times, and a certain group of people will fall for it.
I don't think the truth or fake matters.
No,
about this.
It doesn't.
I think it's just the amount and volume of it. And even if you take the combined amount of truth or fake between both and how much you can go out there and – how much money is going to be spent on promoting it, right? At the end, it winds up being a wash.
Well, see, here's another difference. Like, Clinton is accused of killing Vince Foster, and she's like, of course not, he was my friend, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I could see if you accused Trump of killing Vince Foster, he would say, oh, maybe I did. You better watch out. Yeah, maybe not quite in those words, but it's the same thing. If you start going on like about, you know, marital infidelity or something, you know, which of course Trump has a lot of in his background too, he's not going to be like all ashamed of it. He's going to be like, yeah, I sure did. Did you see what she looks like?
Oh God.
Yeah, you do.
But like I said, but this is, you know, look.
Like, Trump embraces the shit.
Yes, but the reality is, in my experience, my yes. God, is that most Americans.
Well, this is why we have the 90% Clinton, okay, right. And only the 10% Trump. But this is one of the avenues Trump is going to do. Like, you will not believe the shitstorm he ends up throwing at Clinton. The question is, does any of it stick? But the other thing is, of course, if we have a 9/11 scale terrorist attack on an American city, that could get people scared and move them towards Trump too. So we've got some things that are just out there. They're meta things that, you know, shift the balance, that aren't about Clinton or Trump, like a terrorist attack, like the economy, like things like that, that could shift this balance. And maybe Hillary gets indicted.
Not.
You know, but you never know. Like, let's say something comes out about Hillary that is explosive, that doesn't come out.
Whatever.
You know, look.
Whatever.
Yes, we're grasping at straws here, but that's why it's 9%. The 9% is the chances of something crazy happening that flip this balance.
I don't. You know, it's just because of the polarized people that we're talking about. I don't see how there's something you're not getting. Like, okay, are you really convincing a Democrat to vote for Trump?
No,
I don't think
you,
so.
No, but you might get them to stay home.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah.
I don't think so
either. Again, that's why it's 9%.
Right. I mean, I think that you've got to look, and look, you've got, which, you know, you got to separate, like, there's big clumps of voters that are not going to vote for one or the other, right? You got a whole set that's not going to vote for Hillary. You got a whole set that's not going to vote for Trump. You got to look at the number that maybe can change your mind. I don't think there's enough there in order to make that difference in at the numbers that we're looking at. I don't think. I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, I'm not going to say, but I just don't think it's there.
No, I agree. I think, look, we've got the 9% odds that something crazy happens, but I think the real question here is going to be, how big a win is it for Clinton?
Yeah.
You know, because we've got things like, you know, we haven't had enough polls to say it for sure, but we've had things like, you know, polls showing Clinton ahead in fucking Utah. You know? In Utah, the one of the most Republican states in the country. We have polls showing Clinton ahead by a significant margin in Arizona, also a fairly Republican state the last few. We've got a bunch of these. We've got some that haven't been polled yet at all, that, you know, like we have Georgia. Georgia has been polled, but also with a recent poll showing Clinton ahead. You know, we've got, you know, a whole bunch of what were considered solid Republican states that are now potentially in play.
Right.
You know, and
it's nuts.
And so if you got that, then the question is, how big a margin does Clinton rack up? You know, like right now on electiongraphs.com, the range, and the post that I haven't done yet, like, I did an update this morning, and with some new polls, for the first time, Trump's best case if he wins all the states he's ahead in the polls, plus all of the states where Clinton is ahead by less than 5%, he still loses by 20 electoral votes. And soon after I finish recording this show, I'll make the blog post about that. I should have done it earlier today, but, you know, I had to actually, like, work. Ugh.
Oh, heaven forbid, fucking stupid job. I mean, really?
I know.
Fuckers.
But anyway, I, of course, did make that post. It's Electoral College, Trump now losing even if he wins all Clinton's close states. Published on May 4th, 2016. You can find it either linked from electiongraphs.com or directly on abelsmay.com. But at this point, if you do that same thing, the range for Clinton, the expected is Clinton wins by about 138 electoral votes if everybody gets exactly the states they're currently ahead in. But the range is Clinton by 20 to Clinton by 230. So if Clinton wins all of the states where Trump currently is ahead by less than 5% in the polls, and I'll mention all four of the states currently in that category have not yet had the full five polls I use in the average that are actually Clinton versus Trump. They're all relying on old election results too, which may not really be, which probably move them further to the Republican side than they really are. But if you take all four of those states and give it, Clinton wins 230. It ends up Clinton 384 to Trump 154 if you do that. And there may be more states moving in that direction. Who knows? We'll see how it plays out. There's certainly some places I don't expect to flip that will like Trump absolutely just fine. Wyoming is probably still going to be solidly Republican. Oklahoma is probably still going to be solidly Republican, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But who the fuck knows at this point? Like, most of those quote-unquote heavily Republican states have not been polled yet on Clinton versus Trump, or have not had very many of such polls. So I don't know. We'll see. The question will be how big a win Clinton gets, I think. Because I think the current Clinton versus Trump picture is not yet settled. But again, you know, Trump moving into general election mode, he's gonna, you know, change his approach. He'll be attacking Clinton instead of Cruz. He'll presumably moderate some of his positions. He'll start, like, promoting some of his more lefty positions that have so far he's sort of pushed to the background, and
that's gonna do for his Republican backers. I mean, if he starts pushing that shit, I mean, that's the thing that I keep saying.
Well, like I said, they're all gonna be convinced that he's playing a smart game and he was telling them the truth earlier, and now he's lying.
I don't think that they all, you see, not everybody,
just enough.
Whatever. Anyway, all right. Yeah. Okay. All right. So
that's why it's 9%. I think this is like, I'm afraid election is going to be boring because it's just going to be
a blowout.
Clinton's winning. Clinton's winning. Clinton's winning. Let's see how much Clinton is winning by. Now, just watch me. 2 months from now, we're going to get to July, and the polls are going to show Trump winning. But
I don't think so. All right. So that's are we going to talk about the White House Correspondents' Dinner, because it was funny?
Okay. Let's take a break and we'll do that. Nothing else about the Republicans to wash out right now?
No.
Okay. We'll be back after this with we still have the White House Correspondents' Dinner and the convention thing I went to. We'll be back after this. Do you want to understand what is really going on with the presidential election cycle? Then go to electiongraphs.com right away. There you'll find charts and graphs covering the nomination processes in both parties and the general election race for Electoral College votes. For the delegate races, we track not just delegate totals, but also the ever-important analysis of how each candidate has to do with the remaining delegates in order to actually win. For the Electoral College, we track state-by-state poll averages to categorize which states are actually in play and which are not, in order to show you the range of likely electoral results and how that changes over time. Sure, you can get some of this stuff elsewhere, but not in exactly the same way, and not from me, Sam, your prime curmudgeon. I think my election trackers are better than the rest, So come look at mine, electiongraphs.com. Okay, we're back. You want to do the correspondence dinner first?
Yes.
Go for it.
So did you, did you watch any of the clips from it?
Yes, I watched the whole thing.
Watched the whole thing.
I listened to all of the Clinton. I listened to all of Obama live, and then I watched the video afterwards in its entirety, because there were some jokes that were like visual, and I was like, okay, I recognize I'm not getting this because he's showing a picture or something that's supposed to be funny. And then I also watched the whole, Whitmore? What's his name?
Yes, Lewis Whitmore, who apparently
Lewis?
Like...
No, his name's not Lewis.
Lewis, whatever the hell his name is. I can't remember. I never remember his name.
Anyway, Larry.
Isn't it Larry Whitmore.
Larry.
Lewis, anyway, it was I watched L. that too. Okay, well, who apparently like rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
Anyway, let's start with Obama. I watched all of it.
I'm sorry.
Here's the point.
Okay, all right. So with Obama, I just thought that the whole video clip with Boehner was just hilarious. I mean, I'm sorry.
It was okay. Yeah.
You thought it was okay?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was okay. My whole evaluation of Obama's bit was he started out really strong. In the first like 5 minutes, I laughed a lot, and then I sort of trailed off as it went.
Here's the thing. I thought that the Boehner clip was hilarious, in part because, you know, we're talking about Republicans, Democrats, how whatever.
Oh yeah, Boehner's one of those that hates the whole thing at this point. He's so done.
He is so done.
And obviously
thing.
He's out.
The day before, he had made that whole statement that come out about calling Ted Cruz Lucifer in the flesh.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then he shows up in this damn thing. Okay. And he tells. I love the bit. It's like, so. I mean, I'm sorry, but I love that bit. It's like, oh fuck, I got to stay 2 years in Washington. What the fuck do I do? And then Boehner just tells him, well, you know. You do realize you had a beer before at 11:30. It's like, and then he starts offering Obama cigarettes, you know, to try to get him. And then I just love the whole, what the hell. So he's asking, during the video, if you guys haven't watched this, you need to watch this. Then he's asking for some advice from Biden. And so Biden, for whatever the hell reason, is like he's got like about 10 different sets of the same sunglasses that apparently you see Biden wear all the time, and he's cleaning them. And he's like, dude, can you pay fucking attention and stop cleaning your fucking sunglasses? You know, so he didn't stop that. And then they all like strolled like very happily. And like Boehner is like, I don't give a fuck about life. Grabbed a glass of wine a White House steward gave him. It was like, fuck you all. You know, I'm the kid. Yeah, the hell with you. You know, it's like whatever. I thought that was funny just in the sense of I think that you can see that Boehner, like you said, he's like, oh, my God, thank God I got rid of all of you fuckers and I don't have to deal with you anymore ever. Like, really?
Yeah. You know, no, I mean, Boehner clearly felt that way. And I think, you know, Obama's showing that, you know, he's ready for that, too. Boehner was like, you know, the whole division of the Republicans within the House was just like he was so done with that. He was done with the fact that he couldn't get anything done because of his own party. And
what you can tell is that he wanted, and him and Obama together wanted to get some stuff done, but his party wouldn't let him.
Yeah, and it shows you, and this whole like whether or not it's time for the Republican Party to divide in half. I predicted it's not really going to happen, but at the same time, the fact that almost everything that actually got done in the Republican-controlled House was on things where some of the Republicans went along with most of the Democrats in order to vote for something, indicates that there's something weird about the alignment going on, you
right.
know, and at some point that's going to resolve itself. And I don't know when, how, where, but yeah.
So that was it. Of course, I loved how Obama signed off. I just really thought it was hilarious. You know, he just went like a freaking fuck. Dropped the microphone, just said Obama out. And he's like, I'm done. I'm out. I'm like, really? This is the last time. You're not going to see me again. So I thought that was funny. Of course, Trump wasn't there this time. Oh, well.
Yes. Which of course, Obama pointed out. Because last time, yo, that didn't go well for Trump.
No, not really. He really skewered him really good. It, you know, so... So that, yeah.
That's another thing, by the way, which a long time ago we mentioned on the show, but is worth repeating. That's another dynamic you're going to see on the general election. On the one hand, you're going to have Trump with a bunch of Republican surrogates who aren't all that excited about him. And on the other side, you're going to have Clinton flanked by Obama, Biden, and Sanders. Probably right. Sanders. Now, with the way Sanders is going, maybe not. But you're going to have Obama and Biden and Warren and a whole bunch of other Democrats who are fairly popular, you know, on his side, who are dynamic, who are going to give their all, and they're going to be excited about it, and blah 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 blah. And meanwhile, you're going to have Trump over here basically by himself. Because even if he, you know, yes, you're probably going to get a whole bunch of Republicans grudgingly.
He'll have Christie. He'll have Christie.
Oh, and we didn't talk. We'll save it for another week. We got to start speculating about Trump's VP. But
but he's going to have Christie standing there, of course, looking all excited.
Yeah, we got the Christie possibility. Maybe Fiorina is going to be in it again.
Oh, God, I don't think so.
Oh, but, you know, Palin is still available.
Oh, well, Palin's still available. Yes, I forgot that he endorsed them. Yes, absolutely. Of course.
But maybe we end up with Trump Christie or something. I don't know.
God. That would be great. Does Christie come with a leash of some kind or something?
Anyway, back to the correspondence dinner. Anything else about Obama's talk?
How about Whitmore? Whitmore. Well, Whitmore insulted just about everybody at the dinner, but most of those people deserve the insults anyway.
So here's what I thought, and like, you know, there was a whole bunch of. Yeah, a whole bunch of people were upset by Whitmore. A whole bunch of other people were defending him. My main thing was, I think everybody he skewered probably did deserve it, but I didn't laugh.
He wasn't that funny. I gotta admit now, that his style was not the few times way to like skewered like.
You know, honestly, I've never like whenever I've watched him, I've never really gotten him, and maybe he's just not for me. But
I don't find him that funny myself either. Right.
But like the times I did. To what he said, but when they cut to the reaction shot of the person he was talking about, like, you know, like he went after Wolf Blitzer, which we all deserve.
Exactly. I mean, that one, we agree.
Yes, the Wolf Blitzer is a complete tool.
And
the look on Wolf Blitzer's face was just priceless. He went after that other CNN guy. Who was it? The guy who flipped him the finger.
Lemon.
Don Lemon. Okay.
Yes.
You know, Don Lemon, you know, was laughing while holding up his middle finger at him. You know, that was great. You know, he did a whole bunch on, you know, he called Obama out for killing people. He called out the print press for being dead. He called out, CNN for not being news. He did all kinds of things that were all like, spot on. Like, it just, I didn't make me laugh.
Well, you know, so it was more like, I guess the reactions, like seeing a Don Lemon like give him the bird was probably more funny than the actual joke that what's his name did, right?
Yeah, well, and I guess part of it was, and it's Larry Wilmore.
Whatever his fucking name is, who cares? We're never gonna hear about him again.
No, he's the thing that replaced Colbert.
I guess, but it's not as popular as...
No, it's not. But anyway, the thing is, they almost weren't even jokes. They were true statements.
I think that was part of the problem. It's supposed to be a comedy routine. that's where it got, you know, it's like, hey, Wolf, you're just a fucking lapdog over there acting like an idiot. I'm like, well, yeah, it's... I mean, it's a true statement. You're right.
Yeah, like, oh, what was it? Here we go. I just pulled up his transcript because, I mean, like, reading through these are pretty good. Like, here's one. Here's the Wolf Blitzer bit. Speaking of drones, how is Wolf Blitzer still on television? Ask a follow-up question. Hey, Wolf, I'm ready to project tonight's winner. Anyone that isn't watching the Situation Room. Okay, see, now you're laughing.
But you see, I don't know. It's just delivery. Maybe it wasn't as good. You're actually doing this better. Okay? Can I be honest?
Yeah, I don't know. Now, he did end with, you know, people were upset with him using the N-word, but I actually like his ending where he sort of paid tribute to Obama. Like, I actually found that very compelling. And it wasn't a joke. It was like his sort of serious ending.
No. Yeah. At the end, he got serious. Yes.
Yeah. You know, but. You know, I thought that was like people got upset because he used the N-word.
I'm sorry, but
it was you. It was used in an actual. People argue about this, but he used it in a respectful way. You know, and you can argue that's not possible, but it is.
No, look, here's the thing, and I try to explain to people. It's the whole thing. It's like, look, if you're a black dude, you could use the N-word. Okay. All right. It's like me with Puerto Rican. If I'm a fucking Puerto Rican, I can do all the fucking Puerto Rican insults. You can't. Okay. If you're white, you can't do them. It's just the way it works. I'm sorry. It doesn't work. You know, it's what it is. It's just the way it works.
Yeah. I mean, yes. And the way he said it, the way that he did it was obviously a measure of respect, you know, in the way he did it. But that reminds me, Obama's very first joke was along those lines as well, about CPT. And I don't know.
I don't know
if everybody caught the reference, but he was referring to a skit. He was referring to a skit that Hillary Clinton did with
de Blasio. It was de Blasio. Yes. New York City mayor.
Anyway, okay. So they did a thing where they were talking about CPT, which, by the way, is colored people time,
it's kind of like Latin time, whatever.
Is apparently something that, you know, in certain communities is talked about, but the but Clinton and de Blasio, both about as white as you can possibly get, made a joke about this, that somebody was late because of CPT, and then they made it cautious politician time. But of course, what it otherwise stands for is out there for everybody to see, and so a lot of people got upset. So Obama starts out by saying, sorry I'm late, it's because of CPT, which is a joke white people shouldn't tell.
Exactly. Or
something along those lines.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, anyway.
It was just the whole point I was making about this. Yes.
Anyway, for those of you who haven't, go to C-SPAN's website. I'm sure all of this is up there. You can get
this. If you haven't watched it, you should watch it. You'll
both of them.
It was an amusing evening to watch. Yes.
And they generally are. They're fun. And of course, look, you know, they've got, you know, Obama's got a team full of writers doing this for him. You know, it's not like he's coming up with all these jokes on his own, but, you know,
his delivery was very good.
Yeah. Obama has been very good at this. I mean, Bush was sort of mediocre before when he did these things. They were kind of funny because, like, if you got the right writers, almost anybody can be funny, but Obama's really good at the delivery of these things. He comes through on it. And it was funny. We're worth watching, I guess. Okay, let's take a break, and then I'll come back and talk real quick about the Snohomish County, Washington Democratic Convention. We'll be back after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay, here we go. So, so when I got elected as a delegate from my precinct caucuses, it entitled me to go to two things. One was the Legislative District Caucus. And that's the one that we talked about a couple weeks ago when my daughter Amy got elected to be a Sanders delegate to the next level. And the other is the county convention. So I got to go to this, as did my daughter, based on the results of that first thing. Now, except for one legislative district that for some reason or other, I guess, didn't get the stuff done before and had to do the delegate selection this time. The rest of this was all about like the party platform and stuff like this. And so the meeting is scheduled to go from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. It's a relatively tightly scheduled in theory. Now, the reality is they started about 1 o'clock. We got out of there about 5 or 5:30.
Jesus.
My daughter actually left for the last half of it. She's like, screw this, I'm leaving, I'll come back and pick you up later.
Oh, God.
But I stayed through the whole thing. And so, first of all, they're compiling the credentials report of who is there and who's not and who's authorized to be what, they have speakers, local politicians and things like that. And there were like a series of people who were like, running for the state superintendent of schools and running for the state senate and things like that. And, you know, some of that was kind of interesting because, like, these are the kinds of races where normally you get to the election day and you're like, I don't know who the fuck any of these people are, right? You know, Yvonne, who's your state senator right now?
Fuck, I don't know.
Yes, see? And most people, I know my
representative in Congress, but not my state senator. No,
right.
I don't know.
Like state and local government, most people don't pay that close attention to.
I know my mayor. I know the people for the city. I know that. It's state. You know, you hit me with one that I know that state senator. I'm like,
yeah,
blank.
Yeah. And you have a state representative, too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Anyway, so the thing is with these, so it's nice to hear from some of these people, and they're like, you know, and so like I made notes on a few of them, and or mental notes anyway, saying, oh, you know, if I see that person's name on a ballot, now I know who the hell it is, what they said, things like that, and that's nice. So they had some of that, and you know, this whole process of getting all of the stuff settled for who is going to be authorized and all that takes like an hour and a half for some reason, because of course they don't computerize the shit, which could get it done in 5 minutes. But anyway, so they had a couple there's beeping. I hear beeping.
Sorry. My computer beeped.
Yeah. No, it's okay. Anyway, the bottom line is they had people out there, and just I'm trying to remind myself who's my senator? Who's my senator? Oh, here we go. So we had Senator Patty Murray, who's one of Washington State's two senators. Who is, of course, by her position, a superdelegate, and who has come out for Clinton there. And she was going to give like a 5-minute talk or whatever, and basically a pep talk to Democrats about how Democrats are great, and no matter who wins, we're still better than the Republicans, and can you believe Trump, and we're going to beat him, and blah, 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 and it's important that we come together. And a theme for all of these was pay attention to your local races, too. Anyway, that's what her speech is supposed to be. But people started heckling her almost from the moment she came in.
Jeez.
Yelling, Sanders, Sanders, you know, follow the vote. Because, like, Washington, of course, went heavily Sanders, and she's a superdelegate who came out in favor of Clinton. And so, you had people stomping their feet and yelling, yelling Clinton
feets.
From the Clinton side, yelling Sanders from the Sanders side, but the Sanders folks vastly outnumbered. There were people yelling at her that, you know, as a superdelegate, it was her duty to follow along the way the state went, blah, blah, blah. She got through her speech fairly well, though. We had the same thing with a local representative Rick Larson, who's also a Democratic superdelegate who's come out for Clinton. He was booed outright when he came on and yelling about it.
And so this is what they believe is a winning tactic to convince these guys.
Oh, so these two weren't the worst. So the worst.
Oh, those weren't the worst.
The worst one was much later. So we had moved on to the actually, like, talking about the platform, which, by the way, let me say, first of all, even if you're talking about the platform of the Democratic Party nationally, the document means jack shit. It means nothing. Okay, people argue about it, but, like, and yes, it's supposed to state the principles of the Democratic Party, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is we do not have tightly defined parties like some places in Europe do. In reality, every single candidate has different positions on different issues, and you have to pay attention to that. And so Clinton is not bound by the Democratic platform. Neither are any of the people running for Senate or House or anything else. It's a meaningless fucking document. What we are talking about today was not the platform of the Democratic Party of the United States. It was the platform of the Democratic Party of Snohomish fucking County, Washington. Okay? And so, which are all suggestions that people want to be rolled up into the national platform, whatever. But look, and so we're at a point in the, it is like an 8-page document that has the revisions that the platform committee had made. Over the course of the last year, and where people who are really into it came in and they'd made revisions, and there were things like they would strike out one statement that was in there previously and replace it with something that was basically a rewording of the same thing that they thought was a little bit better. So we start going through this process, and people start really getting really upset because they want to introduce a motion to change the wording back to how it was, or they want it in one place. The committee had changed the word equality to equity, and there was a big, like, 5-minute argument about this.
Oh, Jesus, okay? Christ.
In a room of
a great group writing exercise this had to be.
Well, right.
Good
Lord. You know how bad things are. If you have to write a document with 5 people, it already fucking sucks. This is a room of 300 people.
Oh my God.
Okay? And where they're trying to follow Robert's Rules of Order.
And I would guess that 90% of the people have no idea what Robert's Rules of Order are.
No, so there's all kinds of confusion about this. There's all kinds of things. So they're like, what are we voting on now? Is it a motion to do this or is it a motion to do that? They finally got to, like, a position where they were rolling through these and they were taking it sections. So there'd be, like, the environmental section or the foreign policy section or whatever. And the structure ended up being, okay, let's vote on whether or not to keep it as is, as was recommended by the committee. And if you vote that, then you're done. If you vote no, then it's open for amendments. And then you can have people come up and make suggestions. And once we started doing that, it started to become clear, like, we're already, you know, 2.5 hours into this fucking meeting. And people want to go home. And so they're voting, let's just keep the damn thing. But there's this core group of people who really, really, really wanted to, like, have their little additions or changes in there, and they're getting really upset and mad and yelling and blah, blah, blah. And we're in the midst of a debate about some of this stuff. And I forget. And then that is when Representative Del Bene came into the room. And she's actually my representative from where I live.
Okay.
And she is also a super delegate who supports Clinton, coming into a room of Sanders supporters, basically. And she, again, just wanted to give her little, like, five-minute speech or whatever. She was being yelled at. She was being booed. People were saying, who the fuck invited you here? People were like, you know, the chair was like, we'll take a break to hear from Del Bene. And people were yelling, we were in the middle of something here. She's not on the agenda. Go away. And there were people booing her and yelling at her. And she started her speech and people interrupted her and were, I mean, there, look. I understand in some cases heckling politicians. Okay, it can be fun, whatever. But for the most part, I don't care if it's somebody I agree with or disagree with. If I have the opportunity to hear something from a sitting congressman, a sitting senator, a sitting president, whatever, you know, I want to hear what they have to say. I want to listen to it. I may or may not agree with it, but I want to give them the respect of their office and let them hear their thing. And there was none of that. I could not believe how fucking rude these people were. And specifically, I'm like, seriously? You're trying to heckle her off the stage so you can go back to a meaningless fucking debate about the wording of some sentence in a document that doesn't fucking matter? Really?
Oh, man, love it.
And so we ended up, you know, after taking like an hour and a half to approve the entire platform as written. And then they moved on to resolutions, which were things that people had introduced to say that, you know, the purpose of the Democratic, we resolved that the Democratic Party of Snohomish County should be in favor of combating global warming, you know, or whatever. They were all like extremely vague, badly written little resolutions that were submitted by whoever. One of them was to change the fucking name of the Democratic Party to like the Scientific Rationalism Party or something like that.
No, like,
whatever. Actually, and if you read it carefully, it was actually changing the branding of the party, name of the party. But whatever, they were all really badly written. There were only a couple that were actually somewhat serious, and most of them were crap. But nevertheless, people spent huge amounts of time arguing about it. There were clearly like four or five people who were really into it and really wanted to argue all these individual points and kept coming up to talk over and over again. There was one guy who wanted to talk and started talking near the beginning, but then somebody pointed out he wasn't actually a delegate. And so they made him go away, and he was upset, and he kept trying to have other people introduce resolutions to let him talk, and that was just kept getting shut down. So it's all this nonsense. Basically, look, by the way, I participated in a similar process on the Republican side 4 years ago. They do the same kind of shit in a slightly different way. I did the same thing with the Democrats 8 years ago. Also, you know, this is par for the course, but it's just like, really, really, these are the things you're worried about and thinking about. And look, I mean, the resolution to say global warming is bad or we support, or the Democratic Party supports LGBT rights or whatever. Okay, that's fine and dandy and nice, but, you know, this particular mechanism of doing that is kind of pointless, and I mean, I guess you're getting people to participate and getting them excited about things, which is fine, but, like, why don't you get people excited about something that actually matters? I don't know. But it just seemed like an exercise in wasting time to spend several hours, you know, arguing these kinds of platform issues. The speeches from politicians were actually the interesting part to me, because you got to hear from people you wouldn't otherwise necessarily hear from, both people actually already in office and people running for office this year. That was interesting to me. The platform stuff, I just kept laughing. I just kept laughing over and over again. There was one guy next to me at one point. You mentioned people's not knowing Robert's Rules of Orders. On one of these resolutions, after they'd gotten into a cycle of, okay, we're going to vote on this resolution. First, I need a motion to vote on the resolution. And then if that motion is approved, then we actually vote on the motion. And then blah, blah, blah. You know,
how
it says this one resolution. It was actually the one about renaming the party to the scientific whatever it was thing. This one guy sitting about 5 feet from me, when that one comes up, says he gives a motion to reject the resolution. Okay. Which is a Robert's Rule tact that basically just flips it around so that instead of voting for or against the resolution, you're voting for or against rejecting it, which means a yes vote is a no vote and a no vote is a yes vote.
Right.
And it confused the fuck out of everybody. And then it's like, what's going on? I don't know what I'm doing. It was hilarious. It was hilarious.
I
gave the guy a big thumbs up. I'm like, awesome. Look what you did. Look what chaos. You did, because that one ended up taking about twice as much time as the others we were talking about, and the people who were coming up, because you had up to three people giving 3 minute speeches for or against each one, and the people coming up and giving the speeches were confused because they didn't know if they were for or against because he flipped it. It was great. It was great.
I love that guy. That was sorry.
Don't die here, Yvonne.
That would have been awesome to see. I love that. Oh, jeez.
But yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So all of that. It was fun, though. I'm glad I went. I'm actually not going to be able to go to... I was going to, like, go shadow my daughter to the legislative district conferences or caucuses. Not the legislative district caucuses. The congressional district caucuses, where they pick the delegates. They start picking the delegates to the national convention. But I won't be able to, because that weekend I'll actually be at my sister's veterinarian school graduation. So... So I won't be able to go to that. And my daughter's indicated she doesn't want me to go with her to the state convention in Tacoma. She wants to do it by herself. I have to get the reviews secondhand. The only other substantive thing besides, by the way, it may sound like craziness, but like it was fun and instructive to go to these things. Maybe you don't want to do it every year or every 4 years, but I would recommend everybody, if you've got a chance to go to an event like this, do it at least once in your life. It's very interesting to see. But the other takeaway was indeed, you know, the thing about the superdelegates. Like, if you're going to have any fucking chance in hell at getting superdelegates to change their mind, the way to do it is to not boo them and bully them.
You don't think that doesn't work very well?
No. Like... I bet you all three of those people, Senator Patty Murray, Representative Rick Larson, Representative Del Benny, even if they'd had any possible thought about, like, you know, maybe I should vote with my state and I should vote for Bernie and that would be a good idea, blah, blah, blah. You come into a room and by the way, they were going back and forth to a bunch of places. So I'm because all the counties were having their conventions and all these guys were trying to get to as many as they could. I bet this wasn't the only place that got this kind of treatment. And when you go through that, I bet even if they were leaning in that direction, they come out of that going, fuck those Bernie guys.
Yeah.
Just fuck them to hell.
I would think the same thing, too.
You know? Because that is not how you convince people. And that's the Bernie approach to superdelegates was first, ignore them. Second, dismiss them as irrelevant. Third, try to bully them into voting for you. No. Like, if you actually wanted to convince some of these people, you recognize them as individuals, you recognize that their positions are important, they got that superdelegate slot for a reason by having an office that they either got elected to or appointed to or whatever, they've got a job that entitled them to that position, and you respect them for that, and then you try to... you make nice with them and you make friends with them and you try to convince them of why you're right and why Bernie is better, and you do it nicely and maybe you convince a couple. But if you're doing this kind of crap, no, you're not going to convince anybody. Anyway,
doesn't work too well.
I think All right. That's a show.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, we're done. We're out.
Okay. We're done. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Curmudgeon's Corner yet again. You know the drill. Go to Facebook. Talk to us on Facebook. Like us on Facebook. Tell your friends about the show.
iTunes.
iTunes. Review us on iTunes. Have we got any lately?
I haven't checked.
Shame on you. Shame on you. You should check every week.
I know.
I haven't looked in years. We looked when one of our listeners specifically told us they
did one. Yeah, I know. I'll look right now. Now you're saying.
Do, 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 do.
Oh, boy. I'm pulling it up. But hang on one second, for God's sake.
Slowpoke.
I know. Sorry. Here we go.
We still have two reviews. Two five-star reviews. One from 2007 and one from 2015. So if any of you listeners want to chime in and give us another review, preferably a good review. You know, like if you're going to give us a bad review, just don't bother.
Yeah, don't bother. Thank you.
But if you have something positive to say, go in and give us a review on iTunes. And we would really appreciate it. Helps us get visible and seen.
Who was the second person that reviewed us?
Our listener, Jen.
Oh, Jen. Okay. Thanks, Jen.
Her review was politics, economics, tech, occasionally profanity, and some of the funniest outbursts I've ever heard. Our earlier review was by Nuovo. No idea who that might be, who just said it's great.
Never heard of that guy.
And we still have a little stamp that says clean on our podcast.
Oh, okay. It does? Well, that's a mistake. Somebody should correct that.
Oops. Yeah, well.
That's definitely a mistake.
Fuck the clean rating, you know. I don't know what the fuck it's talking about.
Okay.
Anyway, we should have the explicit tag. But, you know, the thing is, when podcasts get the explicit tag, a lot of people don't even try it. You know?
Yeah, it's true. All right. Well, let's avoid lying.
We do swear. Yes. We've tried occasionally not to, but we've always failed.
Yeah, this failed. We're not very good at it.
Anyway, thanks, everybody. I'm banging the table.
I have been banging the table all night, so therefore we're in the same boat.
Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. And now we're clearly in a Clinton versus Trump race for the rest of the cycle. And we'll see how that goes. And if that gets boring, maybe there'll be other things to talk about in the news, too.
Okay. It sounds good.
Have a good week, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.